Hello and good day, eh? Welcome to the Super Good Camping Podcast. My name is Pamela.
I'm Tim.
And we are from supergoodcamping.com. We are here because we're on a mission to inspire other families to enjoy camping adventures such as we have with our kids. Today, we have another returning guest. He's one of the most recognizable faces of the Canadian outdoor adventure scene, particularly in the canoeing community. He has written a whack of books, 18, I think, writes blogs for Explore Magazine and Paddling Magazine. He is a prolific content creator on YouTube, has won multiple awards for his writing and filmmaking. Please welcome again, Kevin Callan.
Woo! Hey, welcome back.
That's you. Awesome. So great to have you back.
For the record, just to let the audience know, we've had this conversation. I suspect this will be different nonetheless. But Zoom didn't work. So we're redoing it and hopefully it plays out this time.
That's the story of my life.
Yours and mine, buddy. Because you work with, I don't know what the right term is, would disadvantaged youth be a reasonable title?
Well, we used to call them youth at risk, but we don't call them that now. We call them alternative learning.
Okay. And one of the things that I know we've spoken about before is that by getting them outside and into nature, it's generally a better thing for them. It has a relatively positive outcome.
Oh, definitely. Like, it's magical. It really is. You have to actually see it. And people won't believe it. For example, so I've done a lot of things in my life with troubled youth, whatever.
Sure.
Probably because I was one of them. I did not do well in high school. I did not do well in school itself because I had learned differently. And once you figure that out. So I worked as guiding in outdoor camps and stuff. But for quite a while, I'm a college instructor, part-time instructor for about 34 years or something. So for the last 20 years, I've actually instructed high school students a college course called Ecosystem Management or Skills, and it's how to identify trees, birds, and stuff like that, just for a job. And if they're not doing well in high school, so they have bad attendance, they have some mental disabilities, they have some maybe drug issues or past drug issues, actually. Then they go into the college and I teach them a college course while they're still finishing their high school. So usually they're a little bit older. They just haven't finished their high school yet for various reasons. And then, if they pass my class, then they finish their high school and then go into post-secondary if they want, or go to prison if they want to.
Right.
It's their choice. And for example, I'm about 3/4 way through the semester now. And the average mark is 97%.
That's awesome.
And they would, if they're rather in high school right now, they would be flunking beyond belief. So they attend every single class. It's really rare. Well, a few of them had COVID last week. but yeah, they basically go because it's different. It's college. There's a meaning behind it. I'm not saying there's no meaning behind high school, but when I was in high school, there was no meaning in high school. Right? But when I went into college or even whatever post-secondary, you're doing to get a job and make a career out of yourself, right? And make money. So it works. It works. But what really works is that they're outdoors. They're not in the classroom. So if I'm teaching them how to identify twigs, I'm not going to sit in the lecture hall. A good example is one of my coordinators, the new person, questioned why my students were getting so high marks, thinking that maybe they were cheating or I was too easy of an instructor. So yeah, I just said, exactly. Well, come to my class and check us out. So he came to the class, couldn't find me. He goes, where were you? I went to your class today. I went, because we weren't in class. We're outside all day. Yeah. A good example, we did twig ID, right? So when you look at a trembling aspen bud, the trembling aspen's lateral bud always is suppressed against its twig, right? And so that scientific term is that it's suppressed, right? So what do I say to him? Okay, the trembling aspen is trembling because it's afraid. So it always hugs itself. And, you know, the beech twig. Look at the beech twig. It's very slender. It looks like it's rolled up. So it looks like a joint. Oh! Wonder why they're getting 97%. It's because you're connecting to them. You're getting them to learn. Then feeling positive about themselves, that's the biggest thing, too. I mean, right now I'm just showing them how to memorize things. I mean, later on in life they're going to have to really know all those scientific terms. But they're feeling confident. They're not being harassed by the administration. They're not being told that they're lonely lives, right? They feel good about themselves. And that's why they're coming to class every week, because they're having fun. So.
That's great. Well, and so that's a perfect sort of segue into share some of your thoughts on how being outdoors affects, because I'm sure that there are pros and cons, affects the mental health of the person that's outdoors.
Well, mental health, it really affects them in a positive way, because the number one is they are who they are. There's no facade. If you think back in even in high school, for example, even at your job, if you have anxiety issues and mental issues, you're faking your character to become part of the normal pack, right? But you're not being your true self. You're masquerading everything. Well, we're out in the woods on a portage and the black flies are bad and everything else. Your true character comes out, whether you like it or not. Like sometimes you don't want that to happen, but it's going to come out, right? And your true character comes out. And when they see that after a few days, not a couple of days. In fact, when I take them out in the woods on a trip, it can't be for one night. It's a big party for them for one night. There's going to be trouble. They're going to try and escape. They're going to try and buy darts down the road, cigarettes. Yep. But after a few days, and they don't know where they are, and so therefore they won't escape because they have to stick with me, because if they, they don't want to get lost, then all of a sudden they realize, oh, it's kind of cool. And they actually don't want to go home. And major reason why they don't want to go home, which is really sad, is because that's where most of the issues are, is at home. So why would they want to go home? They're being their true selves out there. They're feeling good and confident about themselves. They're challenging themselves. No, they're not challenging nature, because that would be stupid, but they're challenging themselves and feeling good about it. They're not getting that at home. Well, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't judge. And that's the other thing. We never judge them, right? So there's a lot of things they've done wrong in the past. I'm just the instructor. So there's a counselor with them and a high school teacher with them as well. But there's a counselor. They all know what they've done wrong. I don't want to know, because if I know, then sometimes you'll judge them and not want to teach them, right?
Yep. Yeah, I can see how that would play. You would place...
You'd be prejudiced.
You'd be looking at them in a different light. Okay, so I know what it's like for me to be somewhere where I don't have a roof over my head, where I can hear the breeze in the trees, that sort of deal. Does that play the same for everybody, I guess there could be anxiety for not having that roof over your head, for, I don't know, not feeling that. Go ahead.
They do at first. Well, even when we do, I mean, we don't take them out on long trips all the time. It's basically every day, every week per day I take them out. And typical, they don't wear the proper clothing. They don't want to go out. They're lazy. They're tired. They're late for class. But the rule is, and I don't say the rule is, I just said, okay, if you want to be here, you want to be here. If you don't want to be here, just stay in high school the rest of your life. Then you have a choice. You either go to prison or you go with me. Right. So then we go out in the first couple of weeks. They're like, Kevin's raining out. I go, I told you, I'm going out every single day, no matter what the weather is. And if you want to join me, you can join me. Okay. So, ended up that they get used to it. And the very first hour of the class is just a walk in the woods. I don't teach them anything. We just go for a walk in the woods for the first hour. And if my bosses ever knew that, because the regular curriculum would be going to the lecture hall and getting all the information possible. I went, no, I just don't want them to do that. Another good example is I had one student this semester, gruff guy. In fact, I had trouble with him at first, but he changed. He's doing really well. Well, it depends. I mean, because they're on certain meds, right? So you have to make sure they're on their meds. And so anyway, I'm blabbing. But he always, his every third word would be the F word. Every third word, right? So the counselor and the high school teacher said, hey, can you stop that? And he goes, you can't stop me. That's the way I talk. And well, we're upset with that language you're using. He goes, well, then you leave then, because I'm not changing the way I talk. So I'm thinking, see, this is why it doesn't work with him, because some administrator is telling him, do not. So I went up to him and I said, hey, you know, what's my job? What do you mean, Kevin? What's my job? Well, you're supposed to teach me. Yeah, but at a college level. So at a college level, I'm supposed to teach you how to get a good job, not just a job, a good job. A good life job. And if you keep saying the F word every third time, you're not going to get a good job. So as in your instructor, I'm telling you, stop saying the F word. Well, that makes sense, Kevin. That makes sense. And while I'm saying that to him, we're walking in the woods for the hour. So everybody thinks I'm wasting my time walking in the woods with him for an hour. But really, am I? I mean, you can't have that conversation in a closed-in room. How many problems have we ever solved sitting around the campfire?
Right. Yeah. Well, it doesn't doesn't that hour of walking just put them in a more receptive place? Like just puts, I would certainly be, you know, your level, you know, your BPM would come down. I would find myself much more chill after an hour of walking through the woods, as opposed to, you know, listening to the traffic going by outside the window.
Yeah. And why do we like portaging and paddling across big windy lakes? It's because it's momentum. So they know every week we're going to go out for a walk, and then we go back to the class and they teach them bird call ID or leaf ID or birds of prey ID in a PowerPoint, because there's a lot of things I can't teach them outside all the time, right? And then what I do is we do the test right there. We don't do the test next week. We do the test right after I actually go over the material, because they have memorized it, right? And I always give them solid hints, like, we're doing mammal ID and there's an otter. And they're all like, oh, I go, well, you ought to know this one, guys. You ought to know it, okay? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's the otter. And then we go outside again to end the class, and we do a bunch of activities. And one, for example, that I've been criticized because everybody's being too safe now. These kids are living in a bubble, and we are going to have some severe mental issues in the next 10, I would say 5 years from now. I think society is going to crumble because the youth today are not allowed to go into nature. We can go on and on about that. We all know that's happening. I mean, I can't do a stream study with them anymore. We used to have to do a stream study with the life jackets on, and they had their swimming test, which is fine. Right? It's fine. The creek is only 2 inches deep, but that's fine. But now I can't even go to the woodlot near the pond because we're going to be near the pond. So you got to be kidding me. So the one I do is I have to teach wood density, like wood ID, to look at a piece of wood, not a twig, but a piece of wood, and identify what kind of wood that is. So before you put in the fire, right? So I get six stick stoves, a whole bunch of different ones. And then I get them in groups of two. I give them 3 matches. Some water. I said, okay, guys, light the stick stove, get a fire going, put the pot over that, put the water in there, boil the water, and then this spaghetti that you get, a spaghetti noodle, everybody gets a spaghetti noodle. The first one that actually gets that spaghetti noodle boiled up and soft enough to tie it into a knot wins 5 extra bonus points, and plus this bag of candy. And they go nuts. And so, you know, the big boss would come up to me. In fact, they came up one day and said, you can't do this, Kevin. What are you doing? You're supposed to teach them wood density ID. I am. Those guys aren't doing too well because they chose the wrong wood. But after they do that, then I'll show them about wood density. But if I went on in a lecture hall for 2 hours about wood density, well, they wouldn't go.
And they'd have a nap. Yep. Yeah.
Well, they'd have a nap, all right.
Well, and so that leads me to, because there's a, I remember reading a thing about one of the things about being outdoors, and in particular, if you're doing a camping trip, is it helps you with your problem solving skills, because nothing ever quite goes according to plan. So you have to, you have to jiggle whatever, you have to figure out it's starting to rain. Okay. So how do we deal with this? We got to have to set up. Well, okay. So step back, go, you know what, if I put the tarp up first, then I set my tent and stuff up, my tent and stuff will be dry, and the tarp is meant to catch the water and stuff like that. That kind of a deal, right?
Yeah, it's all hands-on too. It's a group dynamics is really important, whatever you're doing, right? But especially on a canoe trip. But a couple of activities I do, first of all, they do tarp setup. So I show them only 3 knots, not 8 knots. You don't know, nobody knows 8 knots. Do you know 8 knots?
I do not.
I know 3 knots that work really well. So I'll show them that, the angler's knot, the trucker's hitch, and the slip knot. And then they'll know that. And I say, okay, well, here's tarps. The storm is coming from the northwest. It's going to arrive in 7 minutes. Your group has 7 minutes to put that tarp up before the storm hits. Remember the knots I taught you. Go. And anarchy. But what I'm really doing is I'm not showing them knots. I'm showing how to work in groups, how to actually have a job and work with people. Because when that happens, you're going to get the person, I know what I'm doing. Nobody else knows. I'm more important. Or you're going to have the quiet, shy person saying, you know, gosh, I don't know. You're going to have the introvert saying, well, I know how to put this tarp up, but I'm not going to say anything until the very end. So you have that all happening, but you don't tell them that. And then the storm hits and you look at the tarps, and then you say, oh, by the way, this is what I've done today. And the other is the egg launch, which is friggin' awesome. I love this day. So I bring a barrel full of items, and I put them in groups, and I give them Monopoly money of $200 for each group. I said, okay, I'm going to auction off these items and we're going to do something with an egg with these items, but I'm not going to tell you what yet. So they start, I hold up a frying pan and someone will yell out $50, $50, not even asking their group if they should should take that. No, like, all their group is saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? And the introverts, the really inspired introverts, will actually say, no, he's got something up his sleeve. So let's hold back. Because why are we spending all our money right away? And it's amazing, the group dynamics, right? So what happens is they all have their items, whether it's a frying pan or it's oven mitts or it's even the barrel that's actually cushioned inside. They didn't know because they didn't look. And they say, okay, here's a marker. Have a thrower, have a catcher. You have to throw the egg and someone in your group has to catch the egg with an item that you bought. And I keep moving the distance far apart, far apart, far apart. And sometimes I'll put a hard-boiled egg in there just to mess them up for a while. Because I have no life. I just got to. But you should see it because they'll say, well, see, we bought all our money for a frying pan. Blah, blah, blah. And it's all about group dynamics in real life. But we're also outside all day doing that. So
very cool.
Yeah, problem solving and group dynamics. Cool.
Yeah. And if you don't end up wearing an egg, I guess you would get a sense of accomplishment.
I love it when the egg hits them. I love it.
Yes, but you're a bad man.
Oh, man.
Do you find that with the kids, they haven't had that opportunity to be out in nature before, and now you're providing them with something that?
I've done both. So some do and some don't. It all depends where I'm teaching. So I go to them most of the time. So I'll have a class in Haliburton, for example, which is just 2 hours north of Toronto. And majority of them live in the bush. Like they're all country folk, right? So they'll even know the species. And I'll go beyond that, right? So it excites me. At the same time, though, too, like, you know, they need a focus in life because it's a small town, right?
Right.
So they love when I show up and take them out for the day. And so do the parents. The parents think, what'd you do today? Well, Kevin showed us all how to identify all the birds of prey. What? I wish that I had that when I was in school. But then I also teach in Oshawa and Durham, where I love that because good thing, I'm the only white person there, which I think is fantastic. The multiculturalism around me is amazing. I learned so much from them. Also, they also learn from me because they have no bush savvy whatsoever. And if they do, they're coming from a country that actually it's frowned upon living in a tent, right? So they come to Canada and they're like, no, my parents don't want to go camping. It's like, no, it's different here. So they just soak it in like a sponge. I just love it. So so it's all varied. But what's all the same is they're all what I would call misfit toys, right? They're students or people that never really belong to the normal crowd and feel bad about that and struggle with that. But when they're in the woods, I swear to God, that doesn't happen. Nature takes care of that. I don't know what it is. It's just mystical, magical thing. I mean, that's what my whole book, Another Bend in the River, the memoir I wrote, was all about me being high anxiety, still am, growing up and having a terrible time in life to the point of, you know, taking medication, dealing with suicide attempts and stuff like that. Brutal stuff. And the only time I actually calmed myself down and really felt good about myself was I should go into nature. So if you look at my career, that's what I did all my life, is to find a job and any time I could to be outdoors so I can calm myself down.
Self-therapy. Yeah, I can see how that would work. I mean,
when did anyone ever direct you that way? Did they ever say, Kevin, you really should be working in nature because that's going to help you feel more relaxed or feel more calm?
Not directly, and no doctor ever said that. But my dad knew that. He was also a very hyper person too. I mean, let's put it this way: runs in the family. I'm the quiet one. I have 3 older sisters, and at Christmas, I'm the calm and quiet one. Okay, so
I cannot picture that.
Man. You could never imagine.
It'd be a blast, though.
So, but I think it was just maybe because back in the day we weren't told that. But I did realize when I was out in the woods, I calmed myself down. A great story I've told you guys before, but I think it's a good one to retell, was my dad said, you need to go into some group. And, you know, he tried baseball. He was a prize boxer too. So he always was into sports and I wasn't. And I was a really quiet kid that didn't want to do anything to anybody, right? I had a stuttering problem. I couldn't talk. And then, so he put me into Cubs and I got through Cubs, but then he wanted me to go into Scouts and I just didn't want to be there. I nothing to do with Scouts whatsoever. I helped Scouts 100% all the time throughout my entire career. I just didn't want to be there. And so when he dropped me off at the church, on the Sunday, late afternoon, I'd go and I had a fishing rod and a can of worms head behind the church. And I go to the local stream, which still exists in Milton. That stream's still there. It's a culvert made out of cement, but it's still there. But I would go and catch brook trout. And then I'd get back to the church just before he comes to pick me up. And every time he thought I was there and I never went into that building. And then one night he came home from work and he said, "Hey, you got to be at the scout camp out this weekend." Like, what? "Oh yeah, Dad. Oh yeah, the guys at work were talking all about it." I went, "Oh yeah, yeah, that's right, Dad. Sorry." So we get in the car, and he's driving up to the escarpment near Acton, actually, near the scout camp there. And I had to tell him. "I don't know. I don't even know where this camp is." And he laughed. He giggled. He goes, "Maybe you should spend more time fishing then, right?" So here's a classic. It's about a few years ago. I wish he was still alive to see this. A few years ago, I was in a very busy schedule on a book tour, and I was speaking everywhere, to the point that every single day I was somewhere, right? And the one day I was at this scout leadership gathering in near where my hometown, right? So I'm driving to it. I went, "Oh, man, this is the camp I was supposed to be at when I was a kid. Oh, man." And I looked at what I was supposed to do. I don't really know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be the keynote speaker of this leadership thing and I just envisioned maybe a bunch of scout kids, but there weren't. It was all the scout leaders gathered around, and there was 1,200 of them. Jeez. In a field. And they piped me in with bagpipes to be the keynote speaker to get them all like, "Yeah, you can do this. Yeah." And I went, I go from I couldn't even be there to now I'm talking to all the leaders in a field with bagpipes. Kind of classic.
That'd be cool. Well, Pamela's a scouter, so we get to see lots of stuff like that. Not bagpipes, not yet. Anyhow, I'm curious. Just it popped into my head. So when I assume it's a school liability thing. Stay away from the water. We can't have any kids drowning or anything like that. But if you're on a if you're out camping with them, what is it hike only? So you don't do any canoeing, or how does that all play out?
It all depends on the school board. So Durham School Board, not many of them go canoeing anymore because no water activities inside the school, like my program, because of the drowning that happened a couple of years ago in Algonquin, yep. Where the teacher allowed the one boy to go without the swimming, and there's all bunch of sides of that, right? I mean, one side, I get it, the poor kid didn't pass, so therefore you let him go, but he drowned, and now the guy got manslaughter for it. So now all the principals and all the ministers are saying, "Well, we don't want any water activities." And then you get the school outdoor ed instructors that spend their entire lives, and they're really good teachers. They don't just spend their time in the classroom, they spend their lives taking these kids out on a trip. And then they're like, I've given up the amount of stuff I have to do just to get them out. Or there's other school boards that are 100% behind it. So it all depends what region you're in.
That's unfortunate. It's because I think it's a good thing. And you could do stuff like get them out fishing, right?
Well, even in Halliburton, our fish ID class, we go out ice fishing.
Oh, cool.
You could never do that at the Durham board. Oh, Lord, they would never even allow you to go near the water, let alone the frozen water on top. But in Halliburton, I have to do fish ID this week. "Well, we'll just go fishing, Kevin." "Okay. All right."
That's messed up.
Well, and how much do you think the benefit is getting people generally away from the technology, like the constant social media and constant screen time? Like, is that part of the benefits, you think, with the getting people outdoors?
It is. I'm not against technology. I mean, I use it for various reasons, even, you know, teaching, I use it. So in fact, I'm so glad I still teach. I'm going to be 60 soon, and yet I still have to keep up with technology, similar to what you guys did. You had almost a new program just before the interview. Went, "Oh!" But I have to keep up with my technology to keep up with them, or I'm just a cave person, right? So, but where when we go on trips, for example, backpacking trips where we can't go canoeing, or even canoe trips, we choose routes where technology will not work. Like all the emergency devices, yes. I remember on the one trip was great. There was the Blue Jays were going to win, but we're on a 7-day backpacking trip. And the only way to find out who was winning the series is my sat phone. And they begged. They begged, Kevin, just one call. Just one call, okay? We'll call someone. I went, okay, look, I get it, guys. I get it. Call someone. Choose who you're going to call because you've only got 2 minutes because this is a landline for safety, not for who's winning on Blue, the series, right? So the one guy chose his mother, and his mother wasn't watching the game, so nobody even knew. But, you know, I mean, but the answer to the question is I try to make sure that when we go out there, their technology does not work because it's like weaning off a drug. It really is. And you have to, it takes a long time to wean them off. It takes me a while when I go on trip to wean myself off it. So,
yeah, well, I can speak to, so most of the time we try to find places like way the heck back in Killarney or whatever, where there is no signal, but we went, we did a long weekend, not very long ago in Kawartha Highlands, and I had a signal the whole time. And sure enough, I found myself posting, you know, pictures of the fire onto my Instagram and stuff like that. It's like, oh, dude, the whole point is to get away from that crap.
Yeah, well, it's also a catch-22 too, because when I go out too, like sometimes it's a job through tourism that for me to promote my time out there. So I'll do that where my buddy Andy is just there because he wants to go on the trip with me. And at night, he'll go by the fire and get a tea going or a wee dram. And I'm running around trying to send all my signals. And he's like, well, he's, I hope you're getting paid.
That could be why we love Andy.
So what's coming up for you, Kevin?
You know what? I'll show you. You'll be the first to see this. I'm working with Cliff. I'm writing a kid's book on high anxiety, a kid going out in the outdoors. And I told Cliff I wouldn't talk about this on the media, but we just had a meeting just an hour ago about what's going on. I just got to show you how good this guy is.
It's Jacobson. Right. Is that who we're talking about?
No, it's not Cliff Jacobson. Okay. Another Cliff. So the character book, what happens is this kid goes out on a canoe trip with his uncle, and he does not want to be there. He's high anxiety. He's got the hoodie. He feels that it's dangerous out there. It's more cozy at home. And the uncle is a bumbling idiot and says, you know, you'll be fine. You'll find your true self. And then they go out. And instead of why I love how working with this guy, Cliff, is that instead of the uncle being the dominant person saying, this is how you do it, it's the animals in the background that are teaching the lessons. And I'm not going to say anything more than that because I want it to be a big surprise when this book comes out. But let's just say it has a good ending.
Cool.
And yeah. So I just was so much fun to write something about that. And it's so funny. I mean, the characters, like there's a scene where we have to, you know, tell kids how to poop in the woods. Wait for that chapter.
That's going to go viral for sure.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, that must be a very different experience from what you're used to writing. I mean, writing is writing, but I can see where that would be a whole bunch of fun.
Well, the big thing that's happening right now is like, see, there's a lot of people that they know me as a happy camper. They know I'm a canoeist and they know I write guidebooks and I've written a bunch of books, but they don't know about what I teach. Cause again, I've been only a part-time instructor for 30 something years, not a full-time. I mean, for financial reasons, that's the most stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. But I was able to do all the other things because I was a part-time instructor. So two reasons I taught. One is I love teaching and making a change, but also is that I was able to do all other things, right? But my students at the college and even a lot of my colleagues have no clue what I do outside of the college, the happy camper, right? There's no reason why they would, right? Except halfway through the semester, someone would find someone's parent that would find a Gary the Puppet video and say, my dad said you're the happy camper. Oh, yeah, I do that. Yeah. Okay, now let's get to your lessons, everybody. No, we want to see Gary the Puppet. And, you know, so it does cross over. I mean, there's times why I do Gary the Puppet is because it's a way to the person that actually is doing those stupid things would watch Gary. Whereas if we did what the government wanted me to do, it'd be so boring. We would all watch it. Well, we'd feel obligated to watch it, but we wouldn't learn anything from it. But Gary's the way. I mean, my students at RIST love that guy. He's like, oh my God, that's just weird. Yep. So to write a kid's book now and talk about anxiety, and also my memoir talking about anxiety, and also show what I've all done in my career, was not that easy, because I always liked that wall. I always liked that wall. So.
Yep. Yeah, I can see how that would be a thing.
I have just a question about when you do take the kids out for a longer excursion, do you notice a change in the dynamics between them? Initially everybody's kind of awkward and doesn't know what to do. And then as they're progressing through, that they're becoming more of a team or more socially, the interaction has changed.
Yeah, they change dramatically after that. The reason why is they have to. They can't escape their environment. They're on a trip, right? So if you don't like the one person at a regular school setting, it's a mob mentality. It's a Lord of the Flies mentality, right? But on a trip, you have to actually get along to finish it through. And then when you do finally, and I'm talking about a long trip, not an overnight trip, you bond. Whether you dislike those people or not, you bond. And then when you go back to the classroom, you have that bond, right? In fact, it's more important for them to do the trip earlier. So then the rest of the semester, I have them bonded and getting along and dealing with conflict, because they have to deal with conflict out there. The 90% part of the trip is dealing with the people you're with, even when you're on a solo trip.
Wait a minute. What? Who? The voices. Quick note: you guys are only a couple of days apart, age wise.
You're 60. We're both.
Yours the 28th, I think, right?
Oh, so you're Sagittarius.
She's 25th. Yes. Yeah.
Here we go. We're better people than everybody else, I tell you.
So, since I'm sitting here within reach, I'm going to say yes, you are. I think that covers it for me. That was great.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That's it for us for today. Thank you so much to our special guests, Kevin Callan, and check him out on all of the social media. He is KC Happy Camper on YouTube, and I'm sure he would love it if you subscribe to his YouTube channel. And otherwise, check out us. We are on YouTube as well, and you'll find us at supergoodcamping.com, and you can email us anytime you like at hi@supergoodcamping.com. That's hi@supergoodcamping.com. And otherwise, we'll see you on all the social media, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Bye.